I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
This week, we are taking a look at the 2011 movie Mars Needs Moms, which is a rare animated Disney movie not done by their major studios. This is not a Walt Disney Animation Studios film. This is not a Pixar film. This was done by Image Movers, and Image Movers has done a lot of movies. You've probably heard of a few. They were involved with Back to the Future. They were involved with Roger Rabbit, Death Becomes Her, Forrest Gump. I'm pretty sure you've heard of these movies. In terms of this movie, I want to talk, before we really get into this movie, I want to talk about the style of this movie and that it continues. It had that Image Movers trend of animating an entire movie in motion capture. And they've done this a few times. The Polar Express, Monster House, Beowulf, Christmas Carol. And this was the movie that kind of ended that trend, and I think we're all better for it.
I mean, Beowulf was probably the best version of that. I don't hate that one. The rest of those are kind of all nightmare fuel.
It's not the motion capture. I'll get to the motion capture in a bit. It's the way they try to make these characters look realistic and it kind of enters Uncanny Valley levels of, we're trying to make this look realistic, but also make this look like a cartoon.
This one, I will say, as far as that, is not as bad as Polar Express, which is just absolutely a waking nightmare. I mean, I haven't sat down and watched Polar Express beginning to end because, one, it's a Christmas movie, and two, waking nightmare on Kenny Valley. But that movie is, like, even just the trailer of that was like, okay, I didn't need sleep for the next week. But this is a little bit better than that because they leaned into the cartoony bit a bit more. But still, you know how we talk a lot about, like, oh, the graphics look so good on, you know, high def and whatever. Nope. Not this one.
Yeah, the graphics have not aged in the last 14 years since this movie came out. 2011, 13 years.
There were some parts of this where it was like a close-up on a character's face or whatever, and I literally let out a, that, like, scared my dog. Because it just, some of them were just not great. And rather terrifying. And you could have just edited that shot out, maybe. I don't know. Who saw that in the final render and went, yeah, that's okay. Children won't have nightmares about that.
I mean, there are people who watch Polar Express every year and they love that movie and that's their favorite Christmas movie. So there is an audience.
I mean, there's an audience for horror movies, too, but, you know what I'm saying?
Image Movers' relationship with Disney didn't end there, or wasn't supposed to end there, because they were involved with other movies that were supposed to happen but didn't. About 10 years ago, there was a rumor of a remake of Yellow Submarine. apparently Image Movers was going to do that in the same in the same motion capture animation style. And I'm glad that didn't happen, because I don't want to see CG motion capture Beatles.
Also, I don't want to see, unless it's the really cool idea for the biopic that is coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard about that.
I've heard about the four biopics.
Yeah, where they're doing four different biopics from the perspective of each of the Beatles. That I'm really stoked for. Because the surviving Beatles and all of the family members of the, you know, the ones that have passed, everybody is on board with this idea, and I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. You know, somebody seems to have come up with a good idea that has united everybody involved. I don't, other than that, where you've got like an actor legitimately playing a part in a biopic, I don't want to see like somebody in a mocap suit trying to be like, oh, have I moved like Paul enough? Like, I don't want to see that.
I got a hole in my pocket.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to see that. Like, just let the original animation stand.
And, of course, 20 years ago, they were trying to make the Roger Rabbit sequel happen, which never did. And honestly, at this point, I don't want a Roger Rabbit sequel. Let's leave that alone.
Yeah, we talked about that before. Like, yeah, just let that go.
Now I'm sad because I reminded myself of Coyote versus Acme.
Oh, that thing needs to be in the public domain so much.
Anyway, so here we are with this movie. And I got nothing problem with motion capture. No problem with motion capture at all. Motion capture can be good, like especially in situations where a real person would it be believable, such as, you know, the formation of the Iron Man suit on Tony Stark, or Peter Parker in the Iron Spider suit, or how they animated Thanos in the Avengers movie. So it's like, I'm okay with live motion capture in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you've got Andy Serkis doing anything, thumbs up motion capture.
Exactly. But if you're doing the entire movie in motion capture, and every single actor is in a mocap suit on a set, on a soundstage doing this, and you're doing your best to try to make the animated characters look like the actors, just film it in live action. Like Joan Cusack is in this movie. She sounds like Joan Cusack, and her animated model looks like Joan Cusack.
Yeah, and the same thing for Dan Folger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in this. They make the character look like him. He sounds like him. He's not doing a voice, you know. The thing that confused me, and I had to, like, pause about halfway through the movie and look it up, was I remember when this movie came out, they really heavily were like, come watch this movie with Seth Green. Seth Green is going to be in this movie because he was really big at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like halfway through the movie and I'm like, you know, I know Seth Green's voice really well because he's a big voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
I also know his face, and these actors, you know, the faces look like the actors. That's Joan Cusack. That, you know, I'm recognizing it. Even the Martians, you know,
mm-hmm.
That's Mindy Sterling. She's Frau Farbissina. I know who that woman is. You know, even if they make her look like a Martian, I know who that chick is. Even when she's talking Martian gibberish, I can clock who that is. So where is Seth Green in this movie? I am halfway through this movie. And I had to look it up, and it's like, oh, they made Seth Green do this entire movie in motion capture, and half the time he was on a wire, because it's supposed to be like, oh, low Martian gravity, here I am being all John Carter. And Then they got to the end of the movie and listened back to it, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you don't exactly sound like an 8-year-old kid because you're like a 30-something-year-old dude at this point."
You don't want an entire movie with him doing the Kris Griffin voice?
Well, he wasn't doing the Kris Griffin voice. If you watched at the end of end credits, where you can actually finally see that it was Seth Green doing the little kid, he's just using his own voice. So, like, I mean, Seth Green doesn't particularly have like a deep, bass voice or anything. So he still sounds rather young, but like, he sounded like a 30-year-old dude at that point. I do not know why they cast Seth Green in this part unless they were going to have to him do a character voice, and Seth Green is very good at character voices. Kris Griffin is not all he has. And in fact, like, I'm pretty sure he did the voice of Brian Griffin's human son.
He's also, I mean,
And
Seth Green also does the voice of Leonardo in one of the Ninja Turtles cartoons, so he can sound like a teenager
yeah,
without
I mean,
doing
he
an
can
over-the-top
sound
voice.
fairly young. So, but they just had him do like his like, "Hi, I'm Seth Green at the age I am when I made this movie." Which, not bad, but he doesn't sound like an 8 to 10 year old kid or however old this kid was supposed to be. And so they listen back and they're like, "Oh, this doesn't sound like a prepubescent kid. Let's have him completely dubbed over for the entire movie with an actual child."
This happened before. I mentioned the Polar Express. That kid's motion capture was all done by Tom Hanks. And if you watch the behind the scenes footage of that movie, it's Tom Hanks doing the motion capture for the kid with him trying to do a kid voice. And then they dubbed him over with an actual kid later. I think that's just what they do. It's just, let's get a adult actor, famous actor, to do the motion capture for the kid. And then we'll just dub them over later anyway. Doesn't make sense to me. Why not just get a voice actor?
Well, yeah, or if you're going to have somebody do the motion capture, why not get somebody that's way cheaper than Tom Hanks?
Mean, Tom Hanks was also the conductor and the father and all
But
that other stuff.
yeah, but I mean, like, you've got to pay them for like every minute they're on set. Why not get somebody who's just desperate to break into the industry who will work for way less than Tom Hanks is going to work for?
Stunt men, stunt women, they could do
Yeah.
it, you know?
But like, they really heavily, because I remember at the time that a lot of the stuff that I saw about this movie was them being like, "Come watch a Seth Green movie." And I think if at the time I had walked into the theater, because this was a first watch for me, and if I had walked into the theater at the time and been like, "Yeah, I like Seth Green as a voice actor, I will go watch him in this animated movie," I would have been pissed. Because there's really no way to tell it's him, except that the little kid kind of occasionally has like Seth Green's facial movements sometimes. Because it is Seth Green's facial movements, it is motion capture. But the way they animate the kid is like a little kid. And it kind of does look like little kid Seth Green because Seth Green was a child actor, so we know what he looked like at the time. But like, they change it up enough that it doesn't really look like Seth Green. Like, occasionally you can catch it and you're like, "Oh yeah, that's definitely Seth Green's, mannerisms." But then there's nothing of Seth Green in it, and the only way you really know that it was him doing it is if you watch the credits where they show the behind the scenes footage of the actors like doing the capture performance.
And to come back to what I was originally going to say, I have no problem with motion capture, but if you're going to do an entire movie with motion capture, just do a live action movie. Just do the live action movie. It'd probably be cheaper.
Well, I don't know. The budget for this was not terribly expansive for a sci-fi movie. And I think if you tried to make a movie, you know, where it's like, hey, let's have the whole thing set on Mars and a bunch of people look like Martians or whatever, I don't think you could have made, you know, Wikipedia says the budget for this is $150 million at the time. I don't think you could have made a live action movie that, like, did not look super duper cheap for that amount.
Also, again, motion capture is used in video games, especially a lot of story-driven video games with a lot of cutscenes. Those scenes are done through motion capture, sometimes with the voice actor who is playing that character, sometimes that not, because they're not available. That is another feeling I get in this movie, that it feels like a video game. It doesn't feel like a movie. But that's how I feel about all of those motion capture movies.
Yeah, I mean, considering that is the primary way to do video game cutscenes for a lot of games now, you're right. It does feel like I was just watching like one really long, boring video game cutscene
or
waiting to get to the part.
Scenes. You know, you go on YouTube and you just want to watch the cutscenes of the game. You don't actually want to play it. So you get cutscene that's what it feels like watching is you're watching a compilation of a video game cutscene.
Yeah, I've been playing Far Cry 6 now, and that's how they've done all the cutscenes. I mean, they do that for, like, all the Far Cry games lately. And, you know, it's just Giancarlo Esposito, who I love, doing, you know, like, his best villain dictator. And it's excellent, because they just did motion capture of him being super duper evil, and it's awesome. But also, like, that's better motion capture than this. And, like, yes, I realize that it's like many years later, but you're a Disney movie and that's a video game.
Yeah,
even with tech advancements, like, what are you doing?
Anyway.
This is, I mean, speaking of budgets, this is one of Disney's bigger bombs.
Yeah, not the biggest.
Monetarily speaking,
not the biggest, because we've talked about that. And those two movies go together because I mentioned it last week. When Mars Needs Moms bombed, that Disney went into panic mode because we've said this on the show before. Not just Disney, but every big studio tends to learn the wrong lessons from the success and failure of their films. In this case, they learned the wrong lesson of the failure of Mars Needs Mom, because it was a huge box office bomb, feeling that the reason the movie failed because it had the word Mars in the title. So they looked at their upcoming movie for next month, for the following year, called John Carter of Mars, and said, you know what, let's take the word Mars out of that title, because Mars Needs Moms bombed, and if we can't have another movie with the word Mars on it, because that's why the movie bombed, go back to our John Carter episode to learn more about that. So, yeah, this movie was the direct reason why. I'm not saying that's the reason John Carter failed, but it was the reason the movie's name was changed.
Yeah, we've already talked about the reason John Carter failed. Let's talk about the reason this movie failed.
I think we already did.
Well, no, there is more to the reason why this movie failed than just the mocap stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's get into the plot of this movie, because I watched all the trailers for this movie when it came out and stuff, and you know me, I'll watch pretty much any random sci-fi trash that flits across my screen. You know, I never watched this movie. I didn't watch it in theaters, and then it became a bomb, and then I was like, yeah, I'll watch it later at some point when I'm bored. And I just never did. And then it was like, well, let's do it for the podcast. And now we're doing it. And so I watched it. I could not have told you what this movie was going to be about, having watched all the trailers and stuff. And this movie made absolutely no footprint in the culture for me to tell you anything about it.
Yeah, so this movie is actually based off a book of the same name, and the plot is very similar. So we have our kid, Milo, and his mother, and he's a typical kid. He doesn't like listening to his mom. Typical bratty kid. I never get to do anything fun, blah-de blah-de blah. You remember what it was like to be a kid. You know how annoying you were. So they
Shut
have their.
up. I was a good kid.
I'm talking to the listener, not you.
Oh yeah, all the list all the listener was a bad kid.
But yeah, they have their argument because, he doesn't want to eat his vegetables, which means if he doesn't eat his vegetables, he doesn't get to see the monster movie that his mom promised him to let him see. So he makes the big, I wish I never had a mother. Ah, I
Well,
hate you,
first he
mom.
poisons his cat by feeding his cat broccoli.
Yeah.
Which leads to the only time this movie made me laugh.
Broccoli is
With
poison?
well, no, when the mom was like, the cat like eats the broccoli and then immediately goes and throws up behind a plant, and the mom's like, Milo, what is this? Is this broccoli? And he's like, no, it's vomit, but I can see how you'd be confused. Like,
That's definitely a Seth Green line.
it's really the only time in this whole movie that I actually chuckled. Like, I can see other points in the movie where things were supposed to be jokes. They have the, like, theoretical setup. Punchline of jokes, but they're just not funny. Like, I understand that structurally they are intended to be jokes. This is the only time when that actually landed for me. I was like, okay, that is very much a little kid line. Like, snarky little kind of teenager line. Yes, that is very much a bratty kid line. I understand that. I would have said that sort of thing as a child.
But yeah, so he gets sent to his room for poisoning the cat, and they have the big argument. I wish I didn't have a mom. It's your typical kid saying a very mean thing out of emotion that they do end up regretting later. And so Milo does regret it. He does. He feels bad that he said that to his mother, so he wants to apologize. But she's been captured by aliens.
Isn't that always the way?
Yep.
I mean, if I had a nickel.
So yeah, so Milo, in chasing down the aliens to try to get his mom back, gets captured on the spaceship. They end up going to Mars. Shenanigans, he escapes, and we are introduced to our second protagonist, Gribble, who has been on Mars for 25 years. Because he says Martians are born every 25 years. When Martians are born, they or hatch, as he says, the hatchlings, they need to be nurtured, they need to be taken care of, they need to be mothered. And apparently, the Martian female population are just too busy with creating advanced technologies to take care of children. So they create nanny bots to raise the girls, while the boy Martians are sent to the garbage dumps to be raised by the other Martian men, who are just very emotional. They're very happy. They're hugging. They're all having a good time and partying. So the nanny bots need to be programmed. Apparently, a nanny bot can only be used once. So once every 25 years, they venture to Earth to capture the best mother that they can find, which in this case is Milo's mother, take him to Mars and extract their brain, their motherly instincts, what have you, which kills the mother. Let's be real. Kills the mother. And then uses those brainwaves to program the nanny bots to raise the Martian girls. Yep, Gribble has been on Mars for 25 years, and we do get that very sad flashback sequence of Gribble trying and failing to save his mother. Dude watched his mother die right in front of him. That's gotta screw him up.
Well, I mean, he's a very screwed up dude, so yeah. And the thing that's even worse is that it turns out that the reason why... The thing that's even worse is it turns out that the criteria that the Martians use to pick the mom is by finding... a mom with a really good kid, like a relatively obedient kid.
So he blames himself because he was a good kid.
Yeah, because that's what they value, is obedience. So if the child is relatively obedient, then they figure that the mom has done a good job mothering. And they want those skills for the nanny bots because obedience is the thing that they prize in their society. Gribble does make the point that what a messed up message to send to a kid, right?
You did everything right. Here's your reward. Your mother is dead.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that the Martians saw the point where Milo would, like, finally give in and take out the trash and finally do what his mom, you know. But they didn't see the kind of back and forth.
They didn't see the argument.
I won't eat my broccoli. I wish I didn't have a mom. I wish I, you know. And so that's why they took Milo's mom.
We do get that scene right at the beginning of the movie of the Martians looking for what they consider to be the perfect mom. We get the mother with the bratty child who's just constantly throwing away ice cream as soon as she's being given to him. We don't hear any dialogue. We just see the mother's kind of give her ice cream, begging her to take, and she's just throwing and throwing and throwing each cone. Then we see another mother who has two kids who are just running around, not listening to a thing she says. Well, she just... that poor mother. So, like, okay, those two mothers must not be good mothers because their children don't listen to them. Oh, here, look at this kid. This kid's actually doing what his mother tells him, her. But you're right. I mean, imagine telling that to a bratty kid. It's that because you're a brat, your mother will live. And because this kid is a good kid, his mother's going to die.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that when they get to Mars, you start seeing that, like, most of Mars is relatively colorless in the sense of, like, yes, the Martian soil is red and stuff, but the actual society is very gray and samey and, you know, whatever. Except for occasionally you keep seeing this very colorful graffiti. That's apparently not supposed to be there. And later on, we find that that is a Martian woman named Key, who apparently discovered a transmission from Earth from the 60s that was all very hippie, peace, love, flower power. And she learned English from that. And was like, oh, wow, it has colors. I'm going to put graffiti everywhere and go my own way. This is groovy. And she's kind of annoying. She's supposed to be like the quirky love interest for
Yeah,
Gribble.
Gribble get. Yeah, I. Did we really need to have a love interest in this movie?
Like most movies, no. I mean, most movies do not need a love interest. Let's just be real. We've talked about it before. But especially this one.
But yeah, that's their little quirk is that Gribble sees the graffiti and finds it beautiful and wants to know who's doing it. And once they find out it's Key, he's head over heels for her. And she also ends up falling head over heels for Gribble because, as she says, I didn't know humans could change their skin color.
Because he keeps blushing when she says nice things about him. I have two problems with this movie. One is a problem we frequently talk about when we don't like movies, which is one of the worst sins a movie can commit is to just be boring. And I found this movie very boring.
Me too, to the point where I just ended up just doing other things around the house while the movie played in the background, which probably is the best way to watch this movie.
Not gonna lie, I played a mindless video game while I had it on. Like, I got a lot of the new DLC of Power Wash Simulator completed while I watched this movie. Because that was the only thing keeping me awake through this movie, I'm not gonna lie. But the second part of this movie is I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get out of this movie as far as ethics, except love good. Because I was expecting a little something more concrete out of it. And weirdly, from what I can understand, I haven't been able to find a full breakdown of what's in the book. But I was going through the Goodreads reviews, and a lot of people kept mentioning the word sexist quite a lot, which I also, I'm not sure the movie comes across quite as sexist as the book seems to have for a lot of people who read it. But the movie did strike me as like, I was trying to figure out, like, are they trying to say, like, men are just as emotional and emotionally adept at raising children as women? And maybe putting so much on the mothers is a bad idea? Because Milo seems to have a good relationship with his dad, even though the dad is away on a business trip through the movie. You know? And when we get to Mars, it's the Martian men that seems to be the ones that have the emotional intelligence. You know, they're the huggy ones. They're the ones that actually raise their babies. And when we get to the end of the movie and the babies are in danger, it's the Martian men that instinctively take over the protection of the children, not in a "Grr, let us grab weapons and protect the children," but in what most Western audiences would think of as a very maternal way. They
They
are
see
holding the children and cradling the children and soothing the children.
treating them as if they are their own children.
Yeah. These brand new hatchlings, you know, things, you know, start hitting the fan. There is danger. And it's not the women that go to protect the children, it's the men, and they start cuddling them, soothing them, keeping them from crying. It's the traditionally maternal, quote unquote, actions that the men are doing, and the women start taking up the like fighting stances. So I kind of thought like maybe there was going to be something about like it doesn't necessarily matter which gender or if it's a specific gender at all that does the nurturing of a family. As long as there is nurturing and family, that the problem is that the Martians have outsourced the care of children to robots. But the thing is, the movie doesn't seem to make that either.
It makes, if anything, it on one, if you, here's a way you could look at it. If you want to say that the movie is sexist, it's the fact that it's making the woman who put, quote unquote, their career ahead of family the bad guy. Because the big villain, the matriarch of the female Martian society,
The supervisor.
the supervisor, it's just, you know, we are the intelligent ones. The men are the stupid ones. They're the emotional ones. We are creating this great technology. We have created this great society. We don't have time to raise children. We should be focusing on advancement and rules and structure and all of this stuff. No color. No fun, no nothing. It's work, 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 and let the robots raise the children.
Which is weird because you could tell this was written by a man because this isn't really doing anything new. It's just, what if patriarchy but women?
Yeah, this is pretty much everything people complain about the Barbie movie.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, but it's like, what if all the problems of patriarchy but you just swap the genders? Which is not a very nuanced thought. You know, it's not actually sitting down and thinking about, like, are there any problems with a different gender being in charge? It's just like, well, what if all the same problems with men being in charge, but we just say, women did all those exact same things, which I think anyone with two brain cells can agree wouldn't happen. I mean, there'd probably be different problems, don't get me wrong. I don't think any gender should be like the sole leader of a society or whatever, you know? I don't really believe in matriarchy any more than I believe in patriarchy, you know? But I'm very much a kind of, you know, everybody should mingle together and, you know, figure it out together kind of thing. But I think they would make different mistakes. And the interesting thing about exploring that would be, well, what would those different mistakes be? Not just, what if women made all the same mistakes as men? You know, like, what if women had all the same prejudices against men that men have against women?
That is a bit too much for a Disney kids film.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's what they're doing. Here is they're just like, hey, look, it's just as bad when women do it, which is ridiculous because it's a thing that would never happen. You know? It's like we don't really have to worry about that because that's not a thing that's gonna happen ever. So I'm not really sure what the point of this is other than like, hey, kid, Moms are good, actually.
The theme of the movie seems to be love. The big love thing is how Key says it. Something that has seemed to be seemingly been erased from Martian society. Because love is the opposite of order.
Which I also think is kind of not factual.
Just, it's weird. And then, I mean, the end of the movie, of all things, plays crazy little thing called Love by Queen.
Yeah,
So it's.
because Key keeps calling it the crazy love thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is like the supervisor has told all the women that it's more efficient to raise women without men and via robots, and has erased the history of Mars and been like, we were always raised by robots, and men have always been useless and lived in the dump. And then Key goes down into the caves or whatever and discovers old cave paintings where it's like, here's a heteronormative Martian family. Look how in love they are. Here is mother and father and child. This is the way, family is supposed to be.
Not two men raising another boy and two women raising another girl. Again, questions that is are too big to be asked by a children's Disney movie.
Well, no, I think those are perfect questions to be asked by a children's Disney movie. I just don't think Disney was going to do it in 2011. They're probably not going to do it in 2024, but unless you're the Owl House.
But my point being not necessarily that. I'll apologize for that. I'll apologize.
Yeah, no,
But
I mean, you don't have to apologize, but I get
you know,
what you're saying.
yeah, the that's seemingly being the message that this movie is saying. But this movie, what I meant to say, and I'll rephrase what I was going to say, is that this movie does not have the emotional maturity to go into the details of that. Instead of just saying that's a bad thing,
Yeah.
that's what I'm trying to say.
Not having parents is bad thing is kind of all this movie wants to say.
Like, it doesn't even judge single parent because Gribble is a child of a single parent.
He kind of is sort of a patriarch to in a kind of neutrally good way. To a lot of the Martian male colony in the dump. So he's got some kind of rapport with them. And
He
he
seems to.
also has the one guy that lives with him. Or comes around a lot. So I don't know if you'd call him like a dad or maybe like a crazy uncle or something.
He seems
But,
to be smart enough to create a translator.
well, somewhat of a translator.
It's very Google Translate in the
Yeah,
way it's trans.
he's got to kind of Google Translate. But for a dude that was like taken from his home when he was a kid and has not had formal education after like, I don't know, fifth or sixth grade or something. He's doing pretty good for himself. For a self-taught dude on a planet where nobody speaks his language, good for him. In a way, you can really respect him for what he's done, even with all that trauma and stuff. But the weirdest thing about it is that the thing that really turns the Martian society around is, Milo finally, I know we're breezing through this movie, but there is so little that happens in this movie.
Very
Like,
light on plot.
legit.
Very, that's why I said I watched this movie in the background and I missed nothing.
But, finally, Gribble and Key and some little, robot that I think they thought was going to be like a merchandising, windfall or whatever. They're like, "All right, Milo, time to go rescue your mom." And Milo and his mom have, breather helmets on because Mars has no oxygen. Thank you, John Carter. And due to shenanigans, Milo's helmet breaks, and Milo's mom takes off her helmet and puts it on Milo and, makes it so he can't take it off and put it back on her. And she gives up her life to, save her son in a giant momly sacrifice. And this is the first time Martians have ever actually seen love. Like, parent for child love, or apparently any other kind of love, because apparently they don't know what romance is, because gay people don't exist on Mars. And so they see this and they're like, "Oh my God, a mom is a thing that will give up their life for their child. That must be what love is. We should do that instead of nanny bots, who I guess just like yeet children off cliffs for fun or something. I don't know." That one act makes them just beat all the nanny bots to death and decide to live together in heteronormative coupledom forever and ever. The end.
But we also need a happy ending because the mother does not die. Turns out Gribble has a spare space helmet that he was going to give to his own mother. But like I said, she died. So he finds where it was buried and puts it on the mom's head. And she lives. Everybody lives, Rose! Everybody lives!
Except for Gribble's mom, who is very, very dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then they take Milo and his mom back home just before his dad gets back from his work trip. Yay.
Yay.
Because Martian dads may be awesome, but Earth dads are stupid. And Gribble and Key go back to Mars to have lots of human Martian hybrid babies, I guess. I don't know. And they depose the supervisor, and I guess they start coupling up and
They start,
whatever.
yeah, happy ending. Cue the song by Queen.
And then they show you the credits where they prove that Seth Green apparently did work on this movie.
I mean, like I said, this. I understand what they were trying to do in this movie. I really, really do.
I really, really don't, so you're doing better than I am.
Like I said, they're trying to do the whole, the love of a parent and a child is the strongest bond of them all kind of thing, which is fine, but this movie doesn't really explain it very well. And like I said, this movie does not have the emotional maturity to handle a lot of the questions it's seemingly asking. And like I said, the best way to watch this movie is play it in the background and do something else. Because
I think the best way to watch this movie is not at all.
I mean, honestly, I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed more listening to the movie than I did watching the movie. I think without the Uncanny Valley motion capture animation, story actually is more a I was able to understand the story more. Doesn't make it a good story, doesn't make it a great story, but I was able to understand it.
Did you understand the thing about why the Martians kept talking about dogs?
No idea.
Yeah, there's a thing where like Gribble first gives Milo the translator
Oh,
and
dog
this.
piles. Unauthorized dog pile.
Yeah, the supervisor keeps talking about like something something dog piles or whatever.
Apparently, like, they just climb on top of each other, and I guess that's not the word that they use, but it's the word that Gribble understands. So he just calls it a dog pile.
But the thing is that we still don't get context for that later. It's used up through the end of the movie, but we never understand what it means.
You don't know what a dog pile is?
No, I mean, I know what a dog pile is, but I don't know what the Martians are trying to say with it.
Martians climbing on top of each other disrupt the order. So it's an unauthorized dog pile. That's it. There's no other meaning than that.
Okay, so it's another one of those, this was supposed to be a joke, but it's not funny.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was expecting that to be a setup that had a punchline later where like he is like, "Oh, I see you have a translator. Oh, your translator does not work very well." 'Cause I kept expecting her to fix the translator because she actually spoke English, just English from the 60s. Which is still English now, it's just the slang is a little off. When you use the translator, like you said, it's very Google Translate. You know? And so like verb conjugations are slightly off and things like that, you know? A proper translator would say something like, "No, this is not how it's always been." But the electronic translator will be like, "No, this is not being how it was always, you know, or something." And so I expected Key to like hear what the translator was putting out and going like, "Oh, let me clean that up for you." And getting to the part about dog piles and being like, "What?" You know?
I
And
think
him
it's
being
that
like, "Oh,
there's.
I hear it all the time, and I see it when this thing happens." And her being like, "Oh, no, that's not the context at all." And then you find out that it's something like really boring and ordinary or whatever.
No climbing on top of each other without permission. The unauthorized dog pile.
You know, or it's something like, you know, put your lunch tray back or something. Like, that does, like, he's totally misunderstood the context. Like, he thinks it happens when, like, A happens, and it's really because of B, you know?
But then her own, she herself finds difficulty in translating the word love into Martian because apparently Martians don't have the word for love. She's trying to say it and say it, and then she ends up saying it in English, the crazy love thing.
Well,
So your guess is as good as
I
mine.
wonder if the Martian language has developed two different tracks. Because I don't know exactly how long the Martians have been raising their young like this.
It's pop because we never hear any of the Martian men say anything.
Well, yeah, we do, but his translator doesn't translate it. Which means it probably is a different language. But they seem to have a way of communicating between themselves. And they're very good at mimicry.
Yeah,
Because
because
when Milo first shows up, they mimic Milo exactly. They don't understand the language that the women Martians are using. So I wonder if it's been going on so long that they've either developed their own language or that they are using like Proto-Martian or something,
who knows?
which would be fascinating.
That is more deep thought than this movie has.
Oh yeah, no, but there are interesting concepts here. They just went the least interesting route with them, which makes me angry. I hate when I watch a movie that is so boring and I'm like, I can see 20 way more interesting movies that could have been in this place.
Yeah. So does this movie have magic? No.
Yeah, no. Completely non-magical. Not a single spark of magic. Except for that one joke about the cat and the broccoli. Mm. Also, the cat's name is Cujo, which also made me laugh.
Skip this one, yeah.
That is our official recommendation. Skip this movie.
Yeah. So let's move on to next week. It is time to dive back into the Disney animated sequels, the direct-to-video Disney animated sequels. We haven't done one of them in a while. And we are going down to one that many say is one of, if not the best one, Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time. So we're going to see how Disney handles a sequel to Cinderella.
And also time travel within the context of a princess movie.
Yeah. So that's going to be very interesting to look at. So come back next week for Cinderella 3, and we will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here. Join our conversations on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Rewatching the Magic. We are on the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rewatch the Magic. And new episodes are available every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.
Podcasts are fun,
but there's work to be done.
We encourage you to get involved. Here are some organizations we support.
The American Civil Liberties Union fights for the constitutional rights of all Americans. Find them at ACLU.org.
The National Network of Abortion Funds helps people find access to safe abortion services. Their site is abortionfunds.org.
The Trevor Project provides a 24/7 crisis helpline for LGBTQ youth and education services for schools on LGBTQ issues. They can be found at thetrevorproject.org.
Or find a way to help in your area.